and welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dodi and Hank.
Hello, Dodi. This is a comedy podcast about death, where me and my brother John, and sometimes guests, answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. But maybe not AFC Wimbledon today.
Sorry about that.
But you're so close. You could just go by and check.
I know, but I still have absolutely no idea. I literally had to Google what it was. I'm sorry to add to the stereotype of women who have no idea about sport, but that's me. Sorry.
Well, I mean, it's not like you have no idea about sports that are like a big deal in your country. You probably do, but this is, I don't, to be clear, have any idea about sports that are a big deal in my country. But AFC Wimbledon isn't like, it's not like Manchester United.
Yeah, I still wouldn't know anything about that. Honestly, that's just one of the things I step away from in life. Doesn't have any importance.
Right. Yeah. It stresses me out too much if being involved with sports. Like, they always lose eventually. Like, it's just so extremely unlikely that your team is going to win all the way.
Yeah.
That, like, it's always going to end up in disappointment. And except for that one time when it doesn't, and then next year it will.
Wow.
And that's how it works.
Wow.
Unless you're the Yankees, and then you win all the time because you have all the money.
There are probably a lot of people who are very angry about your pessimistic viewpoint of sport, but honestly, I would agree.
Oh, no. Well, you know, they're not probably... I hope they're not angry. I hope that they just have a different opinion, and
yeah.
I respect their different opinion.
That would be nice. Okay.
How are you doing, Dodi?
I'm good. I'm just really busy. I've just been doing far too much. I kind of... Like, my past self was just very... and empathetic and went, here you go, here's everything, you can handle it, and now I'm dying. Thanks, me.
When you said yes to doing this podcast, I said, never mind, I know how busy you are, let this be the thing that you don't do.
I know.
But you did it anyway.
I know, because I wanted to, and because I enjoyed them, and also because I was meant to be done with a lot of big things, so I was like, oh, I'll be in my free time, but I see a space in my calendar, and
you're
I
not.
Fill it, and then I'm like, why would I do that? But I enjoy it, so
yeah.
Why not?
I know, I do the same thing, and I have taken on too much as well, but the recording of Dear Hank and John is one of the things that I look forward to throughout the week.
Yeah.
And whenever I see it on my calendar the next day, I'm like, oh, thank goodness, that will be a nice hour of hanging out with either my brother or someone else I like. And it doesn't feel like work, which is why I do it.
I cannot believe the amount of things that you take on. It's unbelievable. I was listening to one of these and you were just listing everything that you do. And it was just like, what? So much.
Well, I mean, I think you do more than I do. I just have more help.
I don't know.
Maybe this should be like some group therapy time. Like, what do you need to get past this difficult time where your former self has been unempathetic to your current self?
This should be
what services, what humans, what help? Because it's out there, and it can be very hard once you're busy to fix your busyness because you're too busy to put any time into fixing it.
Everyone's always like, just say no, and like, it's okay to say no, and you need to prioritize your time, and it's like, that's all very well, but when I'm in the point when it's happening and I haven't done that, now what? You just have to keep going. You just have to go through. That's what all my friends say. They're like, you can do it. I'm like, I don't want to do it.
It's not like you can. It's not like you can hire an assistant in the moments when you're working 80 hours a week, because hiring an assistant takes time.
Exactly.
Like, you have to. Yeah, but these are all lovely problems to have. Do you want to know another lovely problem to have, Dodi?
What
is that? When you signed into the podcast questions document where we've got all our questions, you weren't logged in. So you're just, instead of a picture of Dodi, it's a picture of a cute little otter.
What?
You're just the anonymous otter.
Because
that's how Google Docs handles it. It like assigns you a random animal, and you got the best animal of all.
Good.
Except possibly armadillos.
That would do. Yeah, a little otter.
So,
cute.
Thank you for being a little otter on this episode of Dear Hank and John. Do you have a short poem for us?
I do. It's actually the ending of a poem, because I was flicking through my friend Savannah's book, Savannah Brown. She has a poetry book called Graffiti. And I found this on a page by itself. And I thought it was just one poem, but it's actually the end of it. But I think it's perfect, and it sums up what I've been thinking about recently. Okay, shall I read it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Nothing is too pure to avoid being sliced away slowly by each passing second. There's a comfort in knowing that there is an end to each elation and tragedy. There is an end, and I think that is the only thing we can be sure of. Ta-da!
Very Dear Hank and John,
right?
Of you.
Thanks! And yes, you can look at it and be terrified by it, but I think there's so much beauty and comfort in that. I think it was just really nice. I've been thinking a lot about how about time and like the happy moments. I just want to hold on to it because I'm like, no, I don't want it to end, but it's also like appreciate it in the moment, but then also in the terrifying horrible moments there's an end.
Indeed. Well, we now have to move to questions from excitedly move to questions from our listeners. I don't know. There are so many weird and great and also heartfelt and scary and big ones. I'm not even sure where to start. I guess I'll start with this first one from David, who asks, Dear Hank and Dodie, I was reminiscing the other day about my youth, and I came across a stunning realization. It's pretty troubling, and I wonder if you could shed some light on it. I could certainly understand why Shoddy would wear the apple-bottom jeans and the boots with the fur, especially if she wanted to look nice at the club. However, why would Shoddy wear apple-bottom jeans and the boots with the fur and baggy sweatpants, let alone the Reeboks with the straps? Oh, isn't this overkill? Who in their right mind would wear two sets of pants and two sets of shoes? Does Shoddy have four legs? Is Shoddy a centaur? This would explain why the whole club was, quote, looking at her, because centaurs don't frequent nightclubs. But if this is the case, why would she be called Shoddy? Centaurs are usually pretty tall. Any explanation would be helpful, as this has completely shaken my entire worldview. Sleepless and disturbed, David. I don't know that you've left any room for us to have a good time, David. It seems like you explored the bit pretty fully.
Wow.
Do you have any... What are you thinking?
Look, maybe they're cold. Maybe they couldn't decide. I change up my outfit sometimes, you know, keeping some spare shoes in my bag.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe the jeans got tight and she like, so like between that first section of the chorus and the second section of the chorus, she goes to the bathroom and changes because she wanted something a little more comfortable, and so she changed into the baggy sweatpants and the Reeboks with the straps.
Apple bottom jeans? I don't think I ever knew.
Go ahead and Google it. I don't know if I can tell you without feeling like dirty man.
Okay, what are apple bottom jeans?
They're jeans that make your butt look like an apple.
Oh?
And sometimes they actually have an apple on them. They're
okay.
Just like...
Hold up, images. Yeah. Oh, that's a lot of butts. that's what I'm looking at currently.
No.
All right, okay.
Interestingly, one of the selections, so you know how when you go on Google search and there's all the things that are like extra, you can add this search term, it's like, oh, that wasn't what I was looking for. One of them is horse. So maybe horses do wear apple bottom jeans?
Oh.
No.
My goodness. Oh my gosh, this is reminding
me
of
that. This is a meme.
There's that question where it's like, where would it wear the pants? Would it wear it like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The dog wearing pants, yes. There is a horse meme, apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur, and it is a furry footed horse.
Where?
And we'll put it on the Patreon for you so everybody can see it.
Hold up, where are you looking? I'm just gonna put in apple bottom jeans horse.
I clicked on horse.
There it is.
Apple bottom jeans horse. Yeah, there you see it.
Wow, this is
that's all. So my question, so I'm pretty sure that Shoddy is not a centaur because she turns around and she gives her big booty a slap at one point in the song, and I don't know that a centaur could reach their own butt.
Yeah.
And unless like just a really long torsoed, short, horse parted centaur, which now that looks really weird in my head.
This song is gonna mean something very different the next time I listen to it. Wow. David, I do like the
image of a centaur getting low, like just sort of like sagging down with the song until it's like got its knees bent all the way. Is it its front? Is it both? Is it all four legs, or is it just the back where its front legs are like sitting up, like it's a sitting like a dog with the butt going? I don't know. Let's not. I feel weird about objectifying this horsewoman now.
This is just a strange image that's happening in my head right now. I'm enjoying it.
Good, good. I'm glad I've done that to you. Do you want to ask another question?
Dear Hank and Dirty, the person I had thought I was going to spend the rest of my life with recently decided that they are just not in love with me anymore. I've mostly been dealing with this by crying, drinking, and re-listening to all of Dear Hank and John. Any other tips for dealing with heartbreak and dissipation of the majority of your future plans? From Melissa. Wow. Well.
Mm.
Yes, I've been thinking about this a lot recently.
You have?
Yeah.
I have definitely thought about this a lot in my life. Luckily, I haven't been thinking about it a lot recently.
Yeah.
but yes, when there is this thing that you have, like, this is the thing that I'm doing, and like, here's the path that I'm on, and suddenly it's like, zunk. Yeah. No, you're not.
Yeah, that must be so difficult.
It's a lot to reconstruct.
Yeah, I can't even imagine, because I've been through breakups, but there's never really been that sort of, this is it, this is my life, this, like, massive plan ahead of me. So I can't imagine what that feels like to have your timeline sort of disrupted. But there is a book that my friends have lent me. A few times, and it's called it's called A Breakup Because It Is Broken, and I think that really kind of helps to like sum it up. There is a reason for why this has happened, and if you can't find it yet, you will find it in time. But all I can say is, for now, it sucks. Damn.
Yeah, and as far as moving forward, sometimes it's impossible to. But I, in the past, have tried to do new things and try new things and like listen to music I wouldn't have listened to before and do things I wouldn't have done before, which kind of gives me the feeling of like, oh, well, there have always been infinite paths ahead of me, and there was never just one. And now maybe I'm going to find one that is different. Maybe it's better. Maybe it's equally good. Maybe it's worse, but it is a path. And like sort of breaking the hold that the old path had on me.
Yeah.
And that's not a thing that you can do immediately, but it is a thing that comes and that you can with intention sometimes speed along a little bit.
Yeah. And as soon as you start to sort of get that closure from yourself and start the process, the sooner you'll feel better. And God, that's going to be hard to do for a long time. I'm sorry, Melissa.
Write a song about it too.
That's
what Dodie does.
Heck yeah. Although a lot of my friends say, oh, it's gonna be good for your art when something hurts, and that's not what you need yet. No. But yes. In time, make things.
This next question is from Anonymous. Actually, at the bottom says Anonymous Squirrel, which is interesting because we're here with Anonymous Otter. Dear Hank and Dodie, Centaur is completely anonymous. Everyone knows. She's got a whole song about her. I've been dating my boyfriend for over 3 years. We're very happy. I feel like bad answering this question after the last one. We're very happy in my... Sorry. And my family members now regard him as part of our family. I never told my family that he and I met on Tinder. Frankly, I wasn't even sure if they knew what Tinder was. Well, recently, they've been making jokes about how they think Tinder is gross and creepy. I've just sat there awkwardly when they say such things. Do I have an obligation to tell them how we met? Part of them feels like I'm keeping a secret from them, but another part of me feels like it's necessary for them to know, especially if they... Oh. But another part of me feels like it isn't necessary for them to know, especially if they have already formed a negative impression of the app. Do you think I should tell them? And if so, how? Memento mori, Anonymous Squirrel. I'm glad you're so anonymous, because otherwise, I don't know. Does your family listen to the pod?
Yeah.
And then they would know.
Uh-oh.
This is certainly not a situation other people have ever been in.
Although that might not be a bad idea. Just get them to listen to whatever we're about to say. Which is...
I'd, I don't think you have an obligation to tell them.
Yeah.
And I think that I think making fun of Tinder is a fun thing. I think saying it's creepy is another thing, because it's basically saying that, like, people are put off by the idea of people looking for relationships in a certain way or looking for certain kinds of relationships. And that's a thing that we do, but it's a little bit discouraging that it's something that your family might do. But Tinder is a perfectly legitimate way to meet someone. And if you like them, continue to date them. Like, yeah. It's not just, yeah, it's, yeah. And, you know, it's easy to have a bad view of Tinder if you don't know very much about it. Just like for the first 2 years that I was using Snapchat, everybody was like, who are you sending nudes to? And I'm like, oh, God, it's getting old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely agree.
Yeah, this sort of immediate reaction.
Yeah, I agree that there's no obligation to do whatever. I mean, the fact is that you're very happy and everything's all great. I don't really know. Let me see.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just, yeah. Eventually, someday, somebody will be like, how did you meet? And you just say, like, oh, internet dating app.
Yeah.
Internet dating service.
Yeah, you can twist it. You don't need to say the name.
Yeah. Or you will eventually come to embrace it and be like, Tinder, I thought we were just going to maybe smooch a little bit, and it turned out that we fell in love. Or maybe I was there for love and I found it. I don't know. I haven't used Tinder. I don't know what it's like. I'm old and I've been married for decades.
I haven't used Tinder in a while. Should I? No. I don't know. I guess you can find love. Okay. All right. Moving on.
So I have several friends who are single and have internet audiences, and it can be a little weird to use dating services that put your face on there.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Because you never know when people are gonna be like, "Ooh, swipe that person! I know that person from YouTube."
Yeah, there's this other app for "influencers," but you have to get a reference for it. And
what?
Yeah.
What? There's an app for dating internet people?
Yeah, or like influencers. I think it's like for people with, I don't know, for people who have recognizable faces.
Oh, you're freaking joking with me. There aren't enough people. I mean, I guess I live in a small town. I know all the people who have internet presences in my town. It's like me, people that I work directly with, and this one guy who has a farm blog. Like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's for like.
But I guess in London.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's just really funny to see like all of my friends going, "Oh, does anyone have a reference for this app?" And it's all just like, "Oh, I'm lonely and single." but really, if anyone listening has a reference for the Myra app, do let me know.
I feel like you get one. Oh my God, lonely and internet famous.
Oh yeah.
Oh, God. Weird, weird
like
world
a,
that we're in.
What's the, like, just funny. That's a funny thing. the contrast.
Yes.
The juxtaposition. Hey, I'm so popular. And not at all. Please help.
I'm so popular, I can't get a reference for the internet dating app for people who... Yeah. Oh, man. That's really... Oh, wow. Dear. There's an app for everything, I guess.
Dear Brothers of Green... I'm not a brother of green, but hopefully I can help. I have trouble keeping conversations going, and recently I have tried to be better than just letting the conversation fad off and we both look at our phones. Do you have any trusty conversation starters you could lend to a novice like me? Panic and anxiety, Mary. Ooh.
Mm.
Yes.
How do you talk to people, Doty?
Wow. Well, firstly, put your phone away. I've noticed, sometimes I talk to friends and their phone lights up and immediately like it's like, oh, you're not listening. So if that happens, turn your phone over or put it in your bag. Okay, let me see. Trusty conversation starters. Ah, I have a friend called Tom Rosenthal and he's great at these. You just have to be wacky. Yeah, let me see. Oh, my friend Sammy. Okay, my friendship group has a great way to start a conversation. Just play Would You Rather, but make it really weird. Okay, here's one for you. Hank, would you rather have a hand that is made entirely of delicious ham and you can eat from it, it doesn't hurt you, it's just never ending, and it's just wonderful? Or would you rather have an armpit that excretes sun cream and you can use it whenever you need it?
I mean, you talk about these things as if they're both pluses. Like, would you rather always have a delicious ham hand or always have a ready supply of sunscreen? But I'm imagining it like, well, first of all, I don't want to not have a hand. Like, I need both of them. And second, I also don't want to have sunscreen.
This is such a dividing question. Honestly, like, the amount of people... Like, yeah, genuinely. Some people are like, well, obviously, this one. And then it's, like, completely different to what you would think it would be. This is... There you go. Here's your conversation starter. Okay. You're welcome.
Is my ham hand a functioning hand?
No.
Like, or is it just a bunch of ham?
It's just... You'd have all of the complications that would come with having a ham hand.
Right, so it doesn't have, like, muscles in it. It's not like... So yeah, I wouldn't lose use of my hand just so I could have ham all the time.
But you can solve world hunger. You'd never be hungry again. You'd never have to pay for food.
Wait, Dodi, did you say could I solve world hunger with my ham hand?
Maybe.
Like, is it that infinite? Could I just, like, keep chopping and, like, there would always be more ham?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, if it grows ham at, like, an infinite rate, and I could actually feed the world with it, then maybe. But otherwise, I'd have to go with sunscreen, but I wouldn't like that either.
Can we just know?
But these are very good. You've started a very good conversation.
Yeah, how long have we been chatting? It's been a while. There you go. Ham hands or sun cream armpits.
I mean, I have, at my age, you end up with several distinct friend groups. You know, you got my friends from high school, my friends from college, and my friends from work, and my friends from internet, and friends from other. So I have a friend group that has been having a 5-6 year long conversation about whether they would rather eat chocolate flavored poop or poop flavored chocolate.
Oh my god! Oh.
And it whenever I see them, they're like, okay, new modification to the chocolate-flavored poop question. And, like, I know that we've all got our positions, but what if we added an additional condition? And, like, years have gone by, and it has not been settled.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Would you rather have chocolate-flavored poop or poop-flavored chocolate?
No, don't ask me this. I don't know. Oh, goodness. Okay, let me think. Oh, God, it would have to be poop-flavored chocolate. It's like when you eat those jelly beans that are different flavors. Would you rather have a vomit-flavored jelly bean or jelly bean-flavored vomit? I don't want to eat vomit. Oh, no.
Yeah, we come out on different sides of this. I would rather eat chocolate-flavored poop, because how would I even know the difference? There are so many different textures of chocolate.
It would be knowing that that's what's happening. That would mess me up.
You know, I kind of feel the same way about black sausage, that stuff you have in the UK.
That's why I don't eat it. Blood sausage. I literally cannot eat that stuff.
Yeah, like...
Black pudding, yeah. No, like, I leave it out.
I will eat it and I'll be like, this is so delicious and I don't like it.
It's just blood.
I just can't do it.
No. See, can't even, do it. I had eggs this morning and like halfway through them, I was like, oh no, I don't want to think about what I'm eating. No. Gross.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a problem with eggs. They're not like a baby animal. I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I think it's
don't
just
give
the fact
me a heart. Don't tell me. Don't tell me reasons to be upset with eggs, because I love eggs.
I know.
Make me weird about them,
no, I know. I'll freak out. I just block
it out. Have a less good life.
I somehow have the ability to block that out. Well, there you go. Talk about poop,
it is good to have. Yeah, it's good to have things like this in your pocket. Another thing you can do. And this is totally sanctioned, as long as your friends don't listen to Dear Hank and John. Take one of the questions from Dear Hank and John and say, like, make it a hypothetical, or make it into, like, something that your friend is going through, and be like, hypothetically, what would you do if, and then take this next question that I'm about to ask about burritos, because I thought it was amazing. It's from Logan, who asks, Dear Hank and Dodi, I am 12. I am composing a menu for my burrito bike. This is where I will go around town on a bike that has a cooler on the back. And in the cooler will be burritos. Oh. I am currently trying to come up with a menu. What is the style of burritos that you like? Example, what do you like on them? What type of shell? What type of sauce? What type of meat? Etc. Don't forget to be awesome, Logan.
Wow.
Logan. So now everybody at the table is like, okay, we got to help out this 12-year-old kid, hypothetical 12-year-old kid, Logan, who is starting up his burrito bike business, which I love.
Yeah. What a
cool I wish there was
question.
A burrito bike in my town.
Oh my gosh. I would totally, totally get that. That's amazing.
So I do have a couple of questions for Logan. One is the burrito cold or warm?
Yes.
Like, is the cooler to keep them cold or is it to keep them warm?
Because
cooler can keep burritos warm. But, like, I'm not totally opposed to cold burritos.
I'm not even opposed to lukewarm burritos, honestly.
Right. Yeah, I'm a little opposed because I want to know that they're at the temperature they're supposed to be at and they haven't just been sitting there for a day.
Yes.
Because I'm, like... Like, pro tip, Logan, not everybody's going to trust you because you're 12.
Yeah.
And that's not, no fault of your own, but, like, you gotta, like, you just haven't, you don't know all of the things that everybody knows.
Even buying cupcakes.
So people are going to be a little skeptical.
Yeah, from, like, bake sales, it's a bit, okay, well, thanks.
No, don't know. Did you wash your hands, little buddy? A dirty, dirty little baker man.
Sorry, Logan.
I mean... I feel like maybe going simple is the way to go and just doing like have it say like bean and cheese burritos there's a certain simplicity to that. And also like, I don't necessarily like, there's not like when I like a really good burrito is going to have some hot ingredients, but re-microwaving a burrito, one, you're going to get it a little bit soggy. Two, then you're like the salsa and the guacamole is hot. And I kind of like for those
What's
ingredients to be at their like, not like soup, like salsa that shouldn't necessarily be hot.
Yeah.
So if it's going to be reheated, you got to take that into account. And then also I'm thinking like maybe vegetarian just because there's a little less chance of food poisoning.
Yeah.
For your burrito bike.
Gosh,
I love your entrepreneurial go-getter attitude, Logan.
I miss being and the age when these things all seem so possible and like, why doesn't everyone do this? This is going to be my life now. I'm going to be a burrito biking guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, what if there was just an army of burrito children who were all over your town at any time and you could just, like, push a button on your app and they'd be there in, like, 3 minutes?
I'm pretty sure that's called, like, Uber Eats.
So you're saying Uber but for food, Hank. I think there might be a thing that's called Uber but for food. I like the idea of them being 12 a little bit, and I like the idea of like eliminating the choice from it. So instead of being like, oh, I have to like pick what restaurant I'm going to get food from, it's just like there's one choice. Deliver to me a 400 calorie bean and cheese burrito with some sauce on it.
You're
that's
right.
Not going to be great, but it's not going to be bad, but it's going to be here very fast and it's going to be delivered by a child named Logan who's helping to pay for his class trip to Louisiana.
I love this idea. Let's write a movie about it / make it happen.
I like making a movie about it better.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, and this was when I was, after I had graduated from college, I thought, why don't I start a thing? Because I lived in Orlando, Florida, where there's lots of traffic and the stoplights at areas where there's like highway interchanges. The stoplights can be 3 or 4 minutes long.
Oh.
It's crazy. Like you just sit there.
Ugh.
I was like, why don't I just like set up shop at one of those and sell people sandwiches and Cokes?
That's great idea. That is a good idea.
I'm pretty sure that it's illegal, one.
Oh.
But in a second, like, it's also kind of feels like the kind of thing that somebody who doesn't have a biochemistry degree would do with their time. I don't necessarily know that it would be like a super lucrative enterprise, but maybe.
You are allowed to
just
do
be like, ding,
like
ding, 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 Cokes and sandwiches, ding, ding.
Also,
and people just stop to be like, oh, that'd be nice. I won't have to stop on the way home. I could get home faster and I could have a Coke or a coffee and boom.
What if you got run over?
But instead, I became an internet personality.
Yeah, sure, why not? But you could always turn it around.
Could have been anything.
You never know. There's
it's true, that idea is still there.
Too late. Exactly. Okay, let's see. This question comes from Clara. Dear Hank and Dodie. Yesterday I hit a fly in my room because it was noisy and I wanted to sleep. When I was a small child and afraid of flies, my parents told me that all flies were my friends and called Anton. Anton is not moving anymore and I assume he is dead. I feel bad about it. I also need sleep. Am I a monster? Should I at least give him a proper burial? Do I have to inform the other Antons? Any dubious advice would be appreciated.
Oh, Dodie also is strategically avoiding all of the Latin sign-offs that people are.
I can't read that. Like I said, not knowledgeable. No idea. Cannot read that. Mors tua vita.
I mean, I just have to Google them. Everybody is being very I think that means your death, my life.
Oh wow.
Which is like something maybe soldiers say to each other on the battlefield, and I don't know if she's talking to Anton or to us. Because hopefully to Anton.
Probably to Anton.
It's a little upsetting to think maybe us. Do you ever feel abnormal amounts of empathy for things that you normally wouldn't?
Gosh.
Like just the situation?
This is like, such a conflicting usually... question. I mean, I am, yes, yes. Like, for example, Sammy, who we were talking about earlier, has this funny joke where he'll say, look, there's a little rabbit on my hand. There's a little rabbit, look at him. And then obviously my brain goes, there's a rabbit on Sammy's hand, and feels immediate empathy towards this tiny little imaginary creature. And then he'll like pretend to throw it on the floor or something, or like describe his horrible death, and it's like, no! So, yeah. Yes, indeed.
That's awful. Why is that so upsetting?
I know,
that's,
right?
That's fascinating. Like, why play this game with your friends?
But the
Why
thing
play
is,
this game and make a sadness occur?
I usually don't feel any empathy towards flies or bugs, especially spiders. My goodness, you'll never know what, like, you'll never want to know what I've done to spiders. But the moment you name it, like, if I called every fly Anton, I agree, I'd have to give them all burials and sign off in Latin with meaningful quotes.
Yeah, no. I believe we've had a question on Dear Hank and John before about about bee murder, and so it's not even new ground we're treading here. I feel like we still have to explore it though, because it's a strange thing. I occasionally, this is almost upsettingly dumb. Okay. I occasionally will like be walking down the street, and I'll kick a rock, and then I'll kick the rock again, and then I'll kick the rock like a fourth time, and I'll be like, well, now I'm kicking the rock. Now this is a thing I'm doing.
Yeah.
And like I'll like accidentally kick it into the grass, and I'll be like, oh, now I have to find the rock. And so I like look for the rock, and I get the rock. And like, to be clear, there's 1,000 other rocks around, every identical to the one that. But I find the one that was my rock, and I put it back in the street, and I start kicking it. And then I arrive at home, and I'm like, well, now I have a rock.
What do? I take it in? Do I continue to kick?
This is. Yeah, this is now my rock. Like, I now have an emotional connection to this rock, and I'm like literally have several of these rocks in a flower planter in the back of my house.
Oh, you definitely have.
Where
gone
I'm
a step
like, well, I can't just get rid of you.
Yeah.
I'm connected to this. Like, I had a whole like, and now I'm not anymore. Like, I could throw them away now, but at the moment, I can't just like leave it in the road.
This is honestly heartwarming. I think I might shed a tear. Oh, you have like gone up several levels in my mind. That is just the most adorable thing I've ever had.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that to some, I'm sure I've gone down, and to others, I've gone up. But as for Anton.
Yes. Back to the...
Anton was gonna die. In one way or another, and
how
you needed your sleep, Clara.
I'm gonna Google
longer
this.
Than you'd think, actually. Yeah.
Oh, really? How long do flies live?
I think they live like a month. Yeah.
There's like a picture of it, and I hate it. Ugh, gross, gross. Ugh.
28 days. That's quite a long time for a bug.
That's all right.
I wonder what the longest bug life. Internet, how long can a bug live? There is at least one species of long-horned beetle that beats out the cicada with its ability to survive in larval form in dead wood for 35 to 50 years.
Whoa. Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Ah.
Learn something new. That's horrible.
That's a bug that lives as long. Wow.
Wow. You can have him as a friend.
This is good stuff.
As a pet.
Oh, there's more.
Can I just point out, like, the moment anyone talks about bugs, I feel like my entire skin is crawling with everything. Like a hair.
I'm itching my elbow right now.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, no. Then what? At? No. Are you just having fun researching?
I'm just reading on this page that in fact there are some termite queens that live longer than 60 years. What was that little noise, dude? Are you okay?
I don't like this conversation at all. I hate it.
Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to another question that's not about bugs.
All right.
Making sure this one isn't about bugs. Okay, this one isn't about bugs. This one's good. I think this is interesting, and I think that we might be good people to talk about it.
Okay.
This one's from Manny, who asks, "Dear Hank and Dodie, I need some help living as a human, as I think I've missed out on some crucial instructive material. Unfortunately, I'm going to graduate from uni soon, and I'm not a go-getter. Not like Logan selling burritos on the street. How do I succeed in life as a non-go-getter? There are classmates of mine who are go-getters, and it is clear they are going to be successful. Hank is a go-getter, and I understand that this is the ideal way to live life." I'm air quoting now. This is just what this person is saying. "I'm not confident and self-assured enough to put myself out there and hunt opportunities down, but this is what I need to do, or I can't be a satisfactory people. I am scared. I think my question is, can I change my ways? Is there a manual I can read on how to put myself out there and hunt down opportunities and sell burritos on the street? I don't know if I can be an artist if I continue to only do things people say I should do. Are there any careers that don't require go-getting for success? Any dubious advice would be appreciated. Scared and confused, and mementoing mori, Manny."
I have so much to say about this.
I thought you might. I want to start out by saying I totally, like, the thing that you talk about there in the middle, Manny, where you just have done the things that other people have told you to thus far in life, that was 100% me, like,
Hank, that is everyone.
Until, like, my
that
30s.
Is everyone. Yeah. Everyone is lazy. No one is a go-getter naturally, I assure you. If they are,
except for Logan and his burritos.
Oh yes, of course. Oh yeah, Logan's like living life. yeah, like pretty much. I think everyone secretly thinks that they're lazy. Isn't there like a name for that? What is that? It's like
oh there's like imposter syndrome.
Yeah. It's like, oh, when's everyone going to find out that I'm secretly the laziest, most incompetent person ever? And
yeah. Yeah, I literally have employees whose job it is to tell me to do things, to, like, make me do stuff.
Yeah.
And without them, like, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. And,
would
like,
you define
my secret.
Go-getter?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
At this point.
I would now.
But,
yeah.
Like, that took me a while, and it took like, a kind of insecurity to make me do it. I wasn't a go-getter because I was naturally a go-getter. I think maybe very much like Manny, I was a go-getter because I was afraid that, like, otherwise I wouldn't be satisfactory people, as Manny puts it. But, like, you will be satisfactory people without being a go-getter. Much more important. And I know that I say this from a place of having had a lot of success, that visible success and less visible failures that no one really knows about. it's not so much about the success; it's about the success that, or about the confidence that success gives you, or the confidence that like people knowing and saying good things about you, and for example, saying that I'm a go-getter here, that is not the only way to get that confidence. And finding that security in yourself is really what it's about. And of course, the first step is to find security in, like, life and food and shelter and healthcare and all that stuff. But beyond that, finding security in who you... And in it, like, simultaneously with that stuff, finding security in who you are does not require you to, like... to like be Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And if you are thinking that in order to feel valuable and feel confident, that you have to like match up with some imagined future you or some hero that you have, which is what I did for many years, then what you find is that you of course never get there because there's always somebody who's more amazing than you are, like especially inside of your own mind, because that's what your mind is trying to do. It's trying to find, like, it's just trying to find reasons that you're not as valuable as you think as you are.
I don't know why,
but that is the thing that brains do.
Yeah, you said a lot there. That's so true. Like, I am definitely guilty of comparison. And the moment, like, I was naturally lazy. I was definitely, like, I am not a go-getter. I am someone who cannot, like, get up and do anything. But I did little things, and then I got praise from it. People would go, wow, I can't believe you're doing that. Wow, you're working so hard. And then my brain went, oh, maybe I'm not lazy. And the moment I had that thought, I wanted to do more. And then I defined myself as a go-getter, even though there's like this deep, like, knowing that I'm actually not that kind of a person. But I think you can, like you said, you can find that in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the ways that I think that I have found it and that most people find it is that they like sign up, they get signed up or they sign up for responsibilities where people require them to do things, and they do those things, whether
little
that's
things,
taking care stuff. Of a child, or whether that's little things and big things, whether that's doing the job that you have been hired to do, or helping a friend that you know care about and are loyal to. Like, all of these things are like the opportunity to say, like, I have a responsibility, like, to create the responsibility, and that's what gets you out of bed. Nothing, like, it doesn't, like, just, like, being, then there are people like this, I think that they are in the minority, but there are people who are just, like, get up and go, and, like, it's all about to them, like, doing, like, having the most productive day possible, because that's the thing that, that they love. But for the rest of us, it's about signing up for responsibilities and having to fulfill those responsibilities.
Yeah. I think
Dodie and I have both made the mistake of signing up for too many responsibilities because we were trying to motivate ourselves to do stuff.
Bring it back around.
Now we have to undo it.
Yeah.
We have to undo the stuff.
Yeah. Too much faith in ourselves, myself.
This podcast, Dodie, it's time for our sponsors, is brought to you by Getting Out of Bed in the Morning. Getting Out of Bed in the Morning. You don't do it because you want to.
This podcast was brought to you by Sammy's Rabbit. Rest in peace to all of the imaginary rabbits who are dead, and also to all of the Antons.
All of the Antons. This podcast is additionally brought to you by Ham Hands. Your hands are now made of hams, and they will solve world hunger.
Slice them up, send them round. This podcast was also brought to you by Apple Bottom Jeans, which apparently makes your butt look like an apple.
I think you have to have a certain bottom to pull. Like, I don't think that I could have a bottom that looked like an apple, Dodie.
Hank, everyone can have an apple bottom jean. Apple bottom, if they want, by wearing apple bottom jeans. I don't know. Trying to be uplifting.
Thank you. I am not ashamed of my butt at all. I think I have a fine butt. Let's do like one or two more questions before we get to the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
This question is from Mary, who asks, "Dear Hank and Dodie, but mostly Hank, you recently said on the pod that there are 9 missions on Mars right now, which got me thinking, do any of the rovers or orbiters ever catch one another? Like, do we ever get an image back from an orbiter in which a rover is, like, randomly photobombing in the corner? Do they ever bump into each other? While I recognize I am completely anthropomorphizing the robots crawling around on Mars, it's something that I need to know desperately. Please help. May the Force be with you, Mary."
Wow.
Kind of. Definitely happens where, and not unintentionally, but an orbiter will take a picture of a rover. And sometimes it just sort of like happens to happen. And other times they're like, we want to take a picture and see where it's at and see if we can like also take a picture of where its parachute landed and stuff like that. But they are far enough away from each other that they are not going to run into each other on the surface yet. Though the Mars 2020 mission, sorry, I'm bogarting this question, Jody. I know that you want to tell us all about about Mars. The Mars 2020 mission will have a thing where it collects samples, and then the idea is that a future mission will land near there and then go visit it and then pick up those samples and then shoot them back to Earth.
Oh my gosh.
Potentially. Or it will be visited by an actual human being who will collect those samples. So,
they're giving
this has never
each
happened,
other presents!
But it could.
They're all little friends!
Yeah. It'd be really nice if, like, they were not all alone for, like, forever.
No. Hank! Stop it! Don't do this! I'll start feeling empathy towards the... Oh, no, here we go. Just like the rabbits.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, the 2020 rover will literally be, like, picking up rocks and holding onto them, but not for any definite reason. Like, maybe someday we'll be able to go pick up those rocks, but like, mostly it's just like, I just thought, like, I liked this one, and I, like, spent a lot of time with it, so I decided
like
to keep it.
Oh my gosh, they're you!
Just like me! It's just like, that's me, Mr. Rover Man. Yeah, Mars. And that's there's a little bit to do with that I'm going to talk about in today's Mars news, but before we get to that, one more question, Dodi. We had so many good ones this week, and we got to a lot. This was a really good questions per episode rate for Dear Hank and John. I feel like last time we got to like three.
So, our last question comes from Tessa, Dear Hank and Dodi. On Hank's Snapchat today, he posted a video of a movement-activated sink that kept being activated without there being anyone doing so. Hank then made a joke about it being a ghost with dirty hands. Bad jokes aside, this got me thinking. Would a ghost theoretically be able to activate things with movement sensors, like some sinks or those lights that turn on when someone enters the room? Or would they not recognize the ghost, since he, she, they is not technically made out of mass? How do movement sensors work? Do they apply to ghosts, or are they creatures made out of mass only? Memento mori, Tessa. Whoa. Also, where was that sink? What?
It was in an airport. I was in an airport, and it was just like, it wasn't on all the time. It would just be like, off, and then it would be like, psh.
Oh.
And I was like, what's that? Like, what? Like, it's okay if you're like on and you're broken and you're just on. But if you're on and off and on and off and nobody's standing there, like, definitely
an
airport ghost.
That wasn't a bad joke. That's funny. I love that. That's great.
Thanks. Thank you, Dodi.
You're welcome.
So, first of all, I don't know that I like that Tessa's just assuming that ghosts have no mass. Maybe they do.
Oh gosh.
Maybe they interact. They seem to interact with light some. Like, for the most part, stuff that interacts with light or can interact with anything has mass itself. So it seems like ghosts would have mass, unless there's some kind of non-Einsteinian, standard model physics happening here. But I do know how. The sensors work, and so it would depend on the kind of ghost it was. If it was a hot ghost, then it would work. So there's different categories of ghosts. There's hot ghosts, which are like when they're in the room, like they'll touch you and it'll be like, ugh, that was a weird hot ghost hand.
Cold ghost.
And then there's cold ghosts, which
time.
Like they give you cold feelings. And then there's wet ghosts, which will make you wet. And then there's, like, sand ghosts, and they just, like, leave sand around. And then there's air ghosts that are just sort of, like, collected air. And there's pure water ghosts, which are made out of, they're only underwater, and they're just, like, more dense water. And then there's fly ghosts, which are made out of a bunch of flies.
Oh, yeah.
And it depends on the kind of ghost they are. If they're a fly ghost, definitely like gonna activate that sink. But those motion activated sinks are actually not motion activated; they're heat activated.
Oh,
so,
wow!
So it would have to be a hot ghost to
Is
turn.
Is that
it
why sometimes they don't work? Because my hands are cold. That's crazy.
Maybe it's because your hands are cold. I never thought about that, but I'm always like, come on, do the thing, like moving my hands around, even though it's not about the movement; it's about the heat. So you actually want to keep it in front of there. But I feel like if your hands are like room temperature, it's not gonna turn on.
There you go.
And like, if you just happen to be a cold person, what a disaster.
I love the term hot ghosts. That is so great. hot ghost.
You don't like fly ghost?
No, absolutely not. Again, now my entire skin is crawling. No, moving away from bugs.
There's two kinds of hot ghosts. There's the ghosts that are warm, and then there's the ghosts that are just very attractive.
Ah, there you go. Hey, hey, ah, oh, bad jokes aside.
Oh, man. I just typed in AFC Wimbledon to Google News, because I know you didn't bring any.
Yeah.
So, let's see. 1 hour ago, we got some news about former AFC Wimbledon and Southend man joins his good friend at Leatherhead. So that happened at some point in the history of AFC Wimbledon.
I wonder if I could try.
Have you ever noticed that, like, the towns in your country have weird names?
Excuse me? What do you mean? Oh, Leatherhead.
I don't know. I guess towns everywhere have weird names. Just all... when I was... in London most recently, I was looking at the subway stops. I was on the tube. And I was looking at the tube stops, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
And all of the names of the places where it was stopped, it was like a weird feeling of, like, nostalgia, because I'd never heard of any of the places, but they all seemed like such English words. And I live in a place where we speak English, but a lot of the places are named after things that are not in English. Like, they're named after Spanish things or French things or Native American words. And like, Montana obviously is not an English word. It's a Spanish word.
Wow.
Florida, the other state that I'm from, is a Spanish word. Missoula, the city I'm from, is a Native American word. So, but like, this weird, like, connection to, like, oh, these places were named by people who have been, like, living here from here, like, not like came and conquered and, like, took over this area and like got rid of the people who were living here, but living here. And all the places, like, that, like, a weirdly, like, just the names of the places made that more clear to me. Aww. And I just wanted to say that.
Good. I'm pleased. I always forget. That's the number one thing American people always talk about when they come over here. They're like, it's so old. It's so cool. And I forget. I'm just so used to, you know, seeing a building that's like 500 years old. And I'm like, yeah. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, in Mars news.
Oh, yes. Do let me know.
So you guys know that you guys, you Europeans... I'm still calling you Europeans in England, for the time being, at least. Yeah. You had a Mars craft that was headed to Mars, and earlier, last year in 2016, in October, it got to Mars, and then it just crashed into the surface of Mars.
Oh.
Sad face.
Oh, no.
So the report of what happened has been concluded, and here's what happened. So these crafts have on them a bunch of just like in your phone has a bunch of accelerometers that will tell you, like, what direction your phone is facing. So if you turn it sideways, it's like, oh, I know that I'm sideways now, and I'll take a sideways picture. And they also can kind of tell how fast they're moving. Well, the space probes obviously have those as well, so they could tell how fast they're moving, how fast they're spinning, whether they've stopped or whether they're still moving. And what happened was a bunch of those instruments got overloaded when, I think the craft is called the Schiaparelli. I don't know exactly how to pronounce that, but the Schiaparelli, at a crucial moment for not very long, for like less than a second, it spun very fast before it corrected itself. And in that moment when it was spinning very quickly as it entered the Martian atmosphere, because just that's what happens when you hit atmospheres, sometimes you spin. And it's for example, the reason why that guy who jumped out of that Red Bull, like, space balloon, he pulled his ripcord early because he started to spin. And he was spinning so fast that he, you know, if you spin fast enough, you will die. So in a similar way, this thing was spinning so fast that all of its instruments got overloaded, and then suddenly it thought it had landed already. And it sent back a report, basically, and it was like, I'm on the surface of Mars, and then it stopped existing shortly thereafter, and they found a giant crater that it had crashed into. So it thought it landed, but it was wrong, and so it didn't do all the things to prepare for landing, and instead just crashed.
No.
So that's what happened.
Oh, that's so
but
sad.
The good news is that Schiaparelli, while an interesting and useful instrument, a lot of what it was doing was testing out to see if the ESA's landing systems were good enough to put on their much more expensive rover that they're sending in 2020, and we discovered that they weren't.
So this
problem will be fixed.
Okay, good. Well, there you go. That was handy. Handy to know.
Yeah, handy to know. So that is the news from Mars. Dodie, what did we learn today?
I learned what apple bottom jeans are. I've never heard of them before. Well, I've never Googled it before. I've heard of them many a time, but now I know that it's just sort of big booties in jeans.
I learned that Dodie has a friend, Sammy. Have I met Sammy?
I don't know. You should. He's great.
Okay.
Well, aside from all of the terrible jokes.
Great, except for the part where there's all the rabbit murder.
Yeah, exactly.
And we learned that Hank would not eat his own hands. He would feed the world with them.
Oh yeah. Was that the answer that you would give?
No, it wasn't. Like, I don't believe that I could produce an infinite amount of ham from my hands. Like, I just don't accept it.
Then join me on the sun cream office side.
Yes, definitely. At the same time, like, I would prefer for that not to happen either.
See,
unless it was on demand. Like, if it was only when I wanted it to, but if it was just like whenever I sweated sunscreen, no thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, we can ask Sammy. Oh, yes, and we learned that there are two different types of ghosts, of hot ghosts, sorry. There are warm ghosts and incredibly attractive ghosts.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Dear Hank and John, Dodie.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.
This podcast is produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas and Sheridan Gibson. Our social media person is Victoria Bongiorno. Nicholas Jenkins edits the podcast, and our music is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown, don't forget to be awesome.